Jonathan raised an interesting question about what role labor market institutions really play, and what I think about the juxtaposition that it's, if you want to bring down unemployment, it's either the Anglo-Saxon type of capitalism or the Scandinavian way. And as Jonathan said, the standard argument is, well, one is a cheap way, low taxes, the other very expensive one, and probably most people don't really want that except for crazy Scandinavians. Now, first, at least in Europe, from what I know, opinion polls suggest that most of Europe consists of crazy Scandinavians and are willing to pay for welfare states. But I think the whole question is mistaken. I would go so far and say that labor market institutions are really fundamentally irrelevant to employment performance. Now, the theoretical story behind that is that, at least in the standard models, the reason why labor market institutions ought to matter is because they affect the level of wages. And therefore, you need to accept a downward sloping labor demand curve for labor market institutions to play a role. And as a Keynesian, I'm not convinced that there is such a thing as a downward sloping labor demand curve. That doesn't mean that institutions themselves are not important. It's just not labor market institutions that matter, or it's that they don't matter for employment. Labor market institutions, in particular, union density, collective bargaining coverage, but also to some extent minimum wages, are important for income distribution. But they are not necessarily very important for employment. That doesn't mean that all institutions are irrelevant. I would in particular think about financial market institutions or financial structure variables that I would think are very important. But that's a different story. So I wouldn't go too far in going after a varieties of capitalism story, but I would object to a part of it that has a downward sloping labor demand curve and tries to incorporate labor market institution via the downward sloping labor demand curve. So I would not be that fond of some of the, there's very interesting varieties of capitalism literature out there, like the models by Bruno Amabe, that are interesting theoretically, but I'm not convinced that they apply. The financial structures and institutions related to financial markets would also play a very important part of my story of what determines investment expenditures. If I may do some brief commercial break, there's one paper of mine where I argue that financialization or increasing shareholder power has had a negative effect on capital accumulation. And there's another paper of mine where I'm arguing, providing evidence that increasing volatility on financial markets, on stock markets, as well as on foreign exchange markets, has had a negative effect on capital accumulation. Now, for both of these arguments, there's other papers that show similar effects. But that, to me, would be a big part of the answer on how do I separate the interest rate and capital accumulation. I don't think that the interest rate has a particularly strong effect on investment expenditures. Even mainstream studies find elasticity of 0.1, which means that you need huge increases or decreases in interest rates to get relevant or significant changes in investment expenditures. Even with a 5 percentage point increase in real interest rate from, say, the 70s to the 80s, you don't get much more than half a percentage point of capital accumulation, and that's not the doesn't explain the decline that we've experienced. That said, interest rates have some effects, that's also what I find, but it's not overwhelming. I would point to corporate governance issues, to dividend payouts. I mean, dividend payouts share buybacks have increased enormously. Most well known, of course, for the US, where they're well documented, but we recently did a study for Austria where we also show that dividend payouts have increased with quite a bit of a time lag compared to many other countries, but have recently increased substantially. And that is a drag of investment. We have all kinds of increases of financial volatility. I've mentioned stock markets and foreign exchange markets, and that has brought down investment. So I would think that changes in the financial sector go a long way of structurally explaining the decline in capital accumulation, but the interest rate doesn't capture all of it. Does the investment booms or the performance of investment really explain all that much other than the change from the 70s to the 80s? That's a good question, and I'm sometimes also a little bit almost scared by the robustness of the capital accumulation effects in the unemployment equation. But you find them very strongly. You also find that they explain a lot across countries. Now, some of it actually makes a lot of sense. If you think of the employment miracles of the last 15 years or so, well, where did you have the strongest declines in unemployment? Well, that's Ireland and Spain. These are investment booms. They are, of course, residential investment booms, not business investment, but they are investment booms. The increase in unemployment in Japan, though the levels are modest by European standards, but the trend is quite pronounced, it also clearly coincided with a slowdown in capital accumulation. So I think there is quite a bit of a story in there. My interpretation of what has happened in neoliberalism is that we have, I mean, that's not quite this paper, it's a different paper, but I still give you the gist of the story, is that we basically had two growth models emerging. One was a finance-led or debt-led growth model that went via increased, in particular, household debt, because it was not firms, it was households that went into debt, and essentially residential investments. We had that in the US, in Spain, in Ireland, or you had export-led economies, countries in particular like Germany, but to some extent also China, that relied on very sizable net exports to increase effective demand. But the background for both models is that you have a distributional a polarization of income distribution in most of these countries, and that means that as wages are not growing with productivity, consumption expenditure can't grow with productivity, at least not financed out of wage income. So I see a distributional problem that leads to a lack of effective demand, and there's been two ways to overcome that. One has been a debt-led growth model, and the other has been an export-led growth model. But again, that's a footnote to another paper. How far would I go with the deficits? That's a good question and a difficult question. I guess, and in particular, if one thinks in the last instance, it means nationalizing the economy. I guess my answer is I would go very far with increasing the debt levels. If you think of what ended the Great Depression, well, it wasn't exactly the New Deal, though that contributed. It was essentially the Second World War. If you think of the debt levels that we had there, well, that was the increases that we have basically the 100% of GDP or so. I'm not saying that we need the same. I'm saying that historically can give you some sense of the order of magnitude that might be involved. Is that a problem? Well, that depends on what you do with the financial sector. If you have liberalized capital flows, it's a big problem. You'll have a very hard time financing those budget deficits, and the markets are in a position to punish the governments that pursue policies that they don't like. if you have a regulated financial sector, in particular if you restrict international capital flows, then simply put, the rich guys have to save to a large extent in government bonds, and therefore you have a mechanism of financing government debt. So in that sense, I would think that at least in the short run, or short to medium run, I do see political constraints on increasing budget deficits and debt levels via capital flight, but not an economic problem in the Keynesian sense. That said, in particular, in the Mediterranean countries, but of course also in other countries, there is a very serious issue of tax evasion, and there's a strong distributional dynamics to the loss of income, of tax income in particular, in the sense of offshore finance and tax evasion by corporations and the super rich. So, I mean, there is a general distributional issue in raising taxes. And for a country like Greece, one could make a case that there was a kind of fragile class compromise that worked for a while, that meant that governments generated jobs and the rich didn't pay taxes, and as a result you got high budget deficits. So there is a structural element, but from the Keynesian point of view, I think government deficits and debts have to rise quite a bit higher than what they are right now. There was various technical issues that were mentioned, all kinds of measurement problems of the variables, issues of linearity. My line of defense here is simply that I'm by and large doing the same as the mainstream. If my results about labor market institutions are invalid, so are the OECDs and the IMFs, and then they better not do recommendations based on these results. That said, I do have quite strong skepticism about the validity of a lot of the variables that are in there. I mean, if you dig into the details, maybe that's unavoidable with the type of phenomena that we are trying to measure and the different countries that we have. But if you plot your series for different countries, for the countries you know, you see strange shapes. Omitted variables, outsourcing, time effects. Yes, I mean, time effects I do have in there. I mean, I always report specifications with and without time effects. I'm sure I have all kinds of omitted variables, and in particular, I have all kinds of measurement problems that may show up in the time effects. It turns out that the time effects don't... The results for my key variables are not very sensitive to the time effects. Outsourcing in particular, I would not regard as a problem in my case, because outsourcing presumably would have an effect of on investment, and therefore I might register lower capital accumulation. We did a study for Germany where we found that at least for the manufacturing sector, foreign direct investment, in particular to Eastern Europe and emerging and developing countries, had a negative effect on capital accumulation, but not for the service sector. So I might feel it indirectly, but I don't think it would be a problem for what we are doing. Right. Yeah, I think that's it for what I can answer in a reasonable amount of time.